Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. There are only a few weeks out of every year when all four of the major U.S. professional sports leagues are competing in games that matter. I know, it's another sports thing. What can I tell you? When the NBA began their regular season on October 18th, until last night when the World Series championship was finally won by the Houston Astros, giving Dusty Baker a championship as a manager, during that time, the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, and the MLB were all playing games that mattered for those few short weeks. No preseason exhibition games, but they were regular season games. Playoff games, more sports than you could shake a stick at. But we lived in Connecticut. And in Connecticut, there are no professional sport teams. There has not been a professional sports team in Connecticut since 1997, when the Hartford Whalers moved to North Carolina to become the Hurricanes. So even during these past 3 weeks, when there were four professional sports teams playing games that mattered in Connecticut, you were waiting for UConn basketball to begin. Because in Connecticut, UConn basketball is something that virtually everybody roots for. And of those people who root for UConn basketball, most of them root for the women's team more than the men's team, because since 1985, UConn women's basketball has won 11 national championships. They're pretty good. And they will play their first game of this season this week. If we were scheduling a meeting or worship during a UConn women's basketball game, attendance was not good. They didn't even pretend. In an article from the Hartford Current in March of 2014, I learned that the women on the team are expected to adhere to a dress code whenever they are traveling or participating in team activities. While jeans at official team events and functions are always prohibited, there are some things where the women can wear their matching sweatsuits. But when they travel, it is business casual attire. And the women on the team are expected to address all of the support staff, the hospitality personnel that they encounter, by name, while thanking them for the help that they have provided. Talk about setting a culture. This includes the shuttle drivers, the locker room attendant, the hotel staff, you name it, the UConn women are taught to appreciate the role that everyone plays in their being successful. Assistant head coach Chris Daly explains that her first priority is to prepare these young women for life after college, for life after basketball, and teaching them to be grateful, and to see and acknowledge the people around them who likely go unnoticed more often than not is a part of that preparation. It's a good lesson for us as well. Because there are countless people that we encounter during the course of the day who we don't notice or acknowledge or talk to. Think about the person who delivers your mail, picks up your garbage at the curbside, delivers your newspaper. What are their names? How about the person who cleans your pool, cuts your lawn, sprays your yard for spiders? Do you remember the name of the person who bags your groceries, brings food to the table that you have ordered, or processes all of those medical claims that you have to submit? There are so many people in our lives that impact our lives in both big and small ways that in many instances we don't even notice. And if we do, it's only with a passing acknowledgement, but we certainly don't remember them. In fact, we might not have noticed or remembered the two most important characters in the story that Mary Jo read for us this morning about the miraculous healing of Naaman. Justin sort of gave away part of it. They are the servants. The servants in the story probably play the most crucial role in this story that we think of as Elisha's healing of Naaman. Do you realize in the story about Elisha healing Naaman that Elisha doesn't even appear? Twice his words appear, but he isn't even on stage. If we were casting this thing, we would have a voice from offstage for Elisha, because Elisha's words show up when he sends word through a messenger to the king to tell Naaman to come see him after he has torn his clothes. And then when Naaman comes to see Elisha, does Elisha open the door? Does Elisha welcome him in? No, Elisha sends another servant to interact with Naaman and tell him to go clean himself and wash himself in the Jordan. Elisha isn't even on stage and he gets top billing as being the one who healed Naaman, which probably is a clue that it wasn't Elisha who did the healing, but God instead. And that's a conclusion that Naaman comes to with this story. And as a result, Naaman then becomes a believer in Yahweh. For it is Yahweh who does the cleansing of Naaman's skin so that his skin might become like a young boy's skin. He comes to believe in the God of Israel. And in the verses that follow where our reading finished, he goes so far as to ask for 2 carts of loads of dirt from Israel he can take with him back to Syria so he can have a part of this land of which Yahweh is the God over. Naaman's healing and conversion would not have occurred without his miraculous healing. However, his healing would not have occurred if it hadn't been for the encouragement of these 2 unnamed servants. The first is a young Israelite slave girl who had been taken captive during one of the Aramean raids upon Israel. It was these raids that were the cause for the king of Israel's fear and anger when Naaman showed up with that letter asking him to heal him. You've already raided us, now you want me to heal you, and then if I can't do it, you're coming back again? So of course he was upset and concerned. But it was this young captive girl from the land of Israel who was serving Naaman's wife who first mentioned the prophet Elisha to her master. Here she was, a prisoner of war, part of the booty that had been taken by the Arameans when they raided Israel, and even though she was a servant living in a country that wasn't her land, not by her choice, she made a suggestion that would improve the quality of life for Naaman, her captive and her master. What could have compelled her to offer her knowledge of the healing and life-giving power of Yahweh to the husband of the woman that she spent all of her days serving? Many of us wouldn't be quite so generous. If I'm a servant and I'm looking at Naaman, it looks to me like he has everything he could want in life and more, right? He shows up with this whole, all this bounty, this gift to give the king for his healing. He's a person of tremendous wealth. It looks like he has everything you could want, except he's got this skin disease, and except he doesn't know Yahweh. So like a missionary, this young girl tells her master to tell her master's husband about this prophet of Yahweh in Israel who could change his life forever. Miracle 1 is that she even spoke up. Miracle 2, Naaman listened. Naaman listened to the voice of a young captive servant girl in his wife's employ. And he did what she asked, and he set out to go to Israel to get the healing that she said could happen from this prophet of a God he probably had never even heard of. Miracle 2. And so Naaman goes, and when he shows up there, and the king starts tearing his clothes because he's just sure that he's being set up for some sort of a battle, Naaman then listens to the messenger that Elisha sends. Why would he listen to this messenger to go to the prophet's house to be healed? Naaman's a commander of the army. He's used to telling people where to go. And here he is being told where to go by a messenger of the prophet, of the God of Israel. And Naaman once again goes. And inexplicably, even though Elisha has called for Naaman to come to him, Elisha doesn't go to the door. He sends this messenger out to tell Naaman to go and wash in the Jordan. And finally, we read, Naaman gets a little ticked off. He's been chased and healing around throughout this story, and now he gets angry and he prepares to leave. And it's another servant who says to Naaman, you would have done all of these difficult things if this prophet had asked you to. The prophet asked you to do something so simple. Why don't you just do it? And Naaman did. Naaman listened. A slave girl, a prophet's messenger, and now Naaman's servant have all worked together to make sure that Naaman was healed, which led to his faith in Yahweh. It was a number of seemingly little things by seemingly unimportant people that God used together to draw Naaman into faith. Obviously, being cured of his leprosy sealed the deal for Naaman, but Naaman was prompted, guided, nudged, encouraged by this cast of characters who are unnamed in our story, but are essential to it. Without each of them speaking up, things likely would have turned out differently. For you see, they are a part of the cloud of witnesses in Naaman's faith journey. And on this All Saints Sunday, we are encouraged to remember and give thanks for the cloud of witnesses, for those people who have been equally important in our own journeys of faith. What they did, or what they said, these people in our lives might have seemed insignificant at the time, just like these servants. But in hindsight, their words or their actions have combined with those of others to lead us, to bring us, to prompt us into a life-saving faith in Jesus Christ. They may not have been big things. It may have been unnamed people, people who you can't even identify if you were to see them on the street today, that work together to bring you to faith, to bring you to God, to bring you to this altar, to bring you into worship today. A cloud of witnesses for which we give thanks. The goal of All Saints Sunday is not to build a pedestal upon which to put these saints, because pedestals present fall risks with almost 100% occurrence of falling off of them. However, we give thanks for those who through their own imperfect life and faith have impacted our own. We give thanks for those who through their own imperfect lives and faith have impacted our own. I saw this beautifully done at a memorial service I attended on Friday. And the service was for the patriarch of an old family friend of ours. And when I was growing up, we spent a lot of time at their house on Sunday afternoons after church. And they sang in the choir with my parents, and there was all these crossovers. Their kids were older than us. They babysat us, then we babysat their grandkids, and on it goes. And they even came to my service of installation and ordination when I came here to Ascension. Anyway, in a moving, powerful, and honest way, one of their daughters delivered a eulogy of her father that pointed out some of the failings that he had as a man, honestly, but lovingly. Didn't build him up on a pedestal as somebody who didn't have any failings. She talked about some generational trauma that had been passed down through the family. And it might sound horrific, but she did it in such a loving, gracious, kind way, demonstrating love to her mother. It was clear, as she described her father, of the grace and the love he extended to her mom, to she and her sisters, to his grandchildren, to his great-grandchildren. George wasn't perfect, but he was faithful. He was responsible for the faith, the spiritual part, as our church was building a new sanctuary, moving from downtown Elk Grove to the edge of Elk Grove, which now is basically Sacramento. He led Bible studies to encourage the congregation in our faith as we made this huge move from this tiny little church in Old Elk Grove to this big campus that now has a K-8 school and all the trappings of success. George was not perfect, but he was faithful. As it is with all the saints, they weren't or aren't perfect, but through their imperfection, they have had an impact on your life, on my life. So on this All Saints Sunday, for whom do you give thanks? Maybe you don't remember their name. Heck, maybe you never knew their name, but somehow they did something, said something. You observed them doing something to somebody else that made a difference, that touched your heart. For whom do you give thanks on this All Saints Sunday? As we come to the Lord's table for communion, I invite you to remember the saints, those saints in your own life. As we feast together in this life-giving precursor of the heavenly banquet we will all share together one day in heaven. Remember. Remember and give thanks for them and to God. Amen.